Chapter 6. The company was gloomy, with funereal clothes and long faces, and their great hall was ill-lit and dusty, the upper walls covered with filth and cobweb. Some of the diners looked barely alive, and they all had an unhealthy pallor, as if they'd lived all their lives in these shadows, never emerging into the sunlight. There were two pretty girls among them, though, a pale, lithe blonde, and a lush, dark-haired beauty. They immediately excited Klejowski's revolutionary interest. Trapped, like Olympia and Julieta, by the conventions of their class, they might make enthusiastic converts to the cause.
"We were lost," he explained. "We made for your light."
Nobody said anything. They all looked hungrily at the newcomers.
"There's a storm outside," said Antonia, unnecessarily. "The road is washing away."
"They can't stay," said a thin old woman,
voice cracking with meanness.
"Outsiders can't stay."
Klejowski didn't like the sound of that.
"We've nowhere else to go. There's no passable road."
"It would be against his will,"
the woman said, looking up at the shadowed ceiling.
"Old Melmoth can't abide outsiders."
They all thought about that, looking at each other. There was an ancient man, a halo of cotton-spun white hair fringing his skull, at the head of the table. Klejowski took him to be in charge, although he didn't seem to be this old Melmoth. By his side stood a tall, scar-faced servant, the muscle of the family, typical of the type that leaves their own class and helps the aristocracy keep his brothers and sisters in chains. A dangerous brute, to judge by the height and breadth of him and the size of his hairy-backed hands. Still, his face showed he had, at least once in life, taken second prize in a fight.
"Shh, Flaminia," the old man told the woman. "We've no choice."
Several men of the company had swords out, as if expecting banditti or beastmen. Klejowski noticed a pronounced family resemblance. Long noses, hollow eyes, distinct cheekbones. He was reminded of the phantom face in the blue light, and wondered whether perhaps they wouldn't be better off taking their chances with the storm.
"See here," said D'Amato, who seemed to inflate as he dried. "You'll have to shelter us. I'm an important man in Miragliano. Isidro D'Amato. Ask anyone and they'll tell you. You'll be well rewarded."
The old man looked at D'Amato with contempt.
"I doubt if you could reward us, signor."
"Ha!" D'Amato said. "I'm not without wealth."
"I am Schedoni Udolpho," the old man said. "The son of Melmoth Udolpho. This is a rich estate, weighed down with wealth beyond your imagination. You can have nothing we could want."
D'Amato stepped back towards a fireplace the size of a stable where whole trees burned and looked away. He seemed smaller with the fire behind him, and he was still clinging to his bag as if it contained his beating heart. With typical bourgeois sliminess, he'd been impressed by talk of wealth beyond your imagination. Klejowski remembered where he'd heard of D'Amato. Miragliano, a seaport built on a network of islands in a salt marsh, was a rich trading city, but it suffered from a lack of drinkable water. Fortunes had been made via water caravans and canals, and D'Amato had been the leading water merchant in the city, carving out his own empire, forcing his competitors out of business. A year or so ago, he had achieved an almost total control over the city's fresh water and been able to treble the price. The city fathers had protested, but had to give in and pay him. He had been a powerful man indeed. But then the yellow ague had come, and investigating scryers laid the blame on contaminated water. That explained why D'Amato was leaving home.
Schedoni signalled to the scarred hulk.
Giocca, he said. Bring more chairs and mulled wine. Our guests are in danger of catching their deaths.
Klojowski had stepped as close to the fire as he could and felt his clothes drying on him. Antonia had stripped her soaked shawl and was raising thin skirts to toast her legs. Klojowski noticed that at least one of the Udolpho clan was especially intrigued by the spectacle. The flabby old fellow with a cleric's skullcap and a lecher's look in his eye. Antonia laughed gaily and did a few dance steps.
I'm a dancer sometimes, she said, and not a very good one.
Her legs were shapely, with a dancer's muscles.
I used to be an actress too, murdered by the end of Act One.
She stuck her tongue out and hung her neck as if it were broken. Her blouse was soaked to her skin, leaving Klojowski in no doubt as to her qualifications for the entertainment business. D'Amato swarmed around Antonia, making her drop her wet skirts to cover herself.
Sorry, she said. Bought and paid for, that's me. The water wizard has exclusive rights to all performances.
She was remarkably cheerful, and D'Amato was obviously embarrassed by his plaything's boldness.
Harlotry is the path to chaos and damnation, said the shrivelled killjoy. This house was always plagued with harlots and loose women, with their painted cheeks and their sinful laughter. But they're all dead now, and I, righteous and ridiculous Flaminea, am still here. They used to laugh at me when I was a girl, and ask me if I was saving my body for the worms. But I'm alive, and they're not.
Klojowski had Flaminea marked as a cheerless maniac straight away. She seemed to derive considerable enjoyment from contemplating the deaths of others, so she wasn't denying herself every earthly pleasure. The hulk found him a place at the table, next to a moustached gallant who couldn't hold his head properly.
I'm Pintaldi,
the young man said. Alexander, Klojowski returned. Pintaldi reached for a candle and brought it close. Klojowski felt the heat on his face.
Fascinating stuff, flame, he said. I've made a study of it. They're all wrong, you know. It's not hot, it's cold. And flames are pure like sharp knives. They consume the evil and leave the good. Flames are the fingers of the gods.
Very interesting, said Klojowski, taking a swallow of the wine Chocker had decanted for him. It stung his throat and warmed his belly. Flaminea glared at him as if he were molesting a child in her presence.
You are a cleric of Mor,
said a hairy-faced beast sat near old Melmoth.
What are you doing out in the storm?
Klojowski was befuddled for a moment, then remembered his borrowed robe.
Death is everywhere, he said, holding up his stolen amulet.
The dead are everywhere, said the hairy man, especially here. Why, in this very hall, the ghostly disembodied hands of the strangling steward frequently take shape and fix about the throats of unwary guests.
D'Amato coughed and spat out his wine.
Only those guilty of some grave crime need fear the strangling steward, said the folklorist. He only visits the guilty.
My apologies, said Schedoni. We are an old family, and our blood has grown thin. Isolation has made us eccentric. You must think us strange company.
Everyone looked at Klojowski, hollow eyes seeming to glow blue in the gloom.
Oh, no, he said. You've been most hospitable. This certainly compares favourably with the last noble house in which I was a guest.
That much was true, although Klojowski suspected Chocker might share certain talents with Tancredi. All these aristocratic menages kept a pet killer.
You must stay the night, Schedoni said. The house is large, and rooms can be found for you.
Klojowski wondered how long he could maintain the deception. Since the great fog riots, his name had been a byword for insurrection. If he were to be revealed to the Udolpho clan as Prince Klajowski, the revolutionist poet, he'd probably find himself defenestrated, and the far windows of the great hall overlooked the gorge below. It would be a fall of 700 or 800 feet onto jagged rocks. Pintaldi had picked up the candelabrum now and was holding his palm close to a flame.
"See," he said, "it burns cold."
His skin was blackening, and there was a nasty, meaty smell.
"Harlots will rot," said Flaminia.
Klajowski looked across the table at the fair young girl. She had sat, quietly, saying nothing, her eyes demurely cast down. She didn't have the Udolpho look, yet she was obviously part of this bizarre collection. Her lips were unrouged, but deep red, and she had white, sharp teeth. She looked up and caught his gaze. She seemed about 16, but her clear eyes were ancient.
"Without harlots, where'd be the fun in the world?" said Antonia.
Flaminia shook a bony fist at the dancer and spat a chunk of gristle onto her plate. The woman had a fuzz of beard on her chin, and her hair was scraggy grey. Dried out, Antonia was as healthy as a ripe apple, and made a distinct contrast with this withered crew.
"I shall play the harpsichord," said the dark girl sitting by the fat cleric.
Schedoni nodded, and the girl got up, daintily walking across the hall to the instrument. She wore something long, black and clinging, like a stylish shroud. Klajowski was feeling warm again, but somehow the cold was settled in his bones.